A65. Number 23B.
So now we come to the next synonymous term, soul. So now we get into the rhythm, I think. I can do it a bit quicker, though we don't want to be superficial about it. Again, we start out by the core of what soul means. Therefore, the first category, what is soul as itself? And there I think we perhaps can say, well, soul by itself is the divine ego, the divine self. All that has to do with the self is actually that which has to do with the subjective I, which is soul. This is the divine ego. And we can further define that through a funny combination of words that already John Dolley used very much, because it seems that it's very difficult to find terms that are really characterizing soul as what it is. And so we always said it is the infinite withinness. Soul that is showing that everything is within. See, we had always that sense of science itself, that it is something to itself. Now, soul, as the divine ego says, I have everything within myself. That's the infinite withinness. That's the divine ego, the divine I, because the divine I can never be conscious of anything else but itself. So it has within itself everything. And that is bringing out the true identity of being. Soul is that unchangeable, that's the next tone, the unchangeableness of being. That ego remains the ego as what it is in its all infinite withinness, and there is an unchangeable self, an unchangeable identity. And that because it's unchangeable, it is immortal. It is immortality. So soul is immortality. It's not life so much that is immortality. It is actually soul, and that is immortality. And you know, even in the human language, when we humanly one talks about the soul, the most consistent belief about soul is that soul is immortal, that the body can die, but that the soul goes on and is immortal. So here again we have that sense that soul is that the divine ego that has within itself everything, that is what it is, that it is of divine self. Therefore as such it is an unchangeable identity that does not change, that remains untouched. And because it remains unchanging, it is immortality, the immortality of soul, which is sinless. And with sinless, I know that you have some objections, because you say, what has that to do with the category one that should be somewhere else? You may be right, I'm not quite sure, but it is a terrific sense, sinlessness, the sinlessness of soul, which says the identity of being can never deviate. Can never deviate. Sinless sin is deviation from. Hitting the mark. Therefore, the sinlessness is a very positive sense. It's so to say saying the same thing as that soul is unchangeable. There we have no objections that we say soul is unchangeable. Well, being unchangeable is only possible because soul has nothing within itself, within that withinness, that can deviate from itself. That's sinless. No deviation from itself. And that strengthens even more the unchangeable identity of being. But you always can put there a question mark, or you can say, I don't like it, and you trace it out. If you don't like it, there's still enough left in the column to establish a sense of what soul is. You know, we must not be more papal than the Pope is, huh? We say, we must have some kind of flexibility and not lay down the rule forever. The infallibility of the Pope. So we come to the second category, where we say, now what is soul in its realm of soul, in the universe of soul? What is the characteristics there? Well, it is, soul is unlimited. That gives the sense of a realm, of a universe. It's unlimited. Because we know that soul is never in anything. So the moment we see that soul is never in anything, therefore it has no limits. It is never in any limits. So that's why we have here that soul here is unlimited. So that divine ego, that divine within us is unlimited. In that realm, soul is never without its representation. See, it, principle and idea is one. Principle is always represented by its idea. So here soul, Mrs. Eddy would say, is never without its representation. It is always in the whole universe there. Therefore, because it's everywhere, that withinness is everywhere, it is a sense of the capacity of soul. It speaks about the capacity of soul. Capacity means the ability to hold within itself. So it's the infinite capacity, it's the infinite withinness, the ability to hold the whole universe within itself. This soul is absolutely inviolable. Is that all right? It's inviolable. It cannot be hurt, it cannot be touched, it cannot be defaced. It remains intact. Can you see? Only when we are in divine science we can say, in that whole universe of soul there doesn't exist a single thing that could touch soul, that could make soul deviate from its identity, that could deface the identity. Is that clear? It's unviolable, it's intact, the intactness of soul. That's why we also very often then speak of the integrity of soul. Because it can just not be changed. You see, everything that brings out that the identity is so intact that nothing can change it, can touch it, can mar it, can deface it, can deflect it, or anything like that, is all the sense of that wonderful sense of soul as unchangeable identity. We also have here the rule of soul. Because soul rules in its own universe. So soul is not ruled to itself. It couldn't easily be in the first column because it has nothing to rule. Soul doesn't need to rule itself, but it's a ruling that goes on in its own universe. And gives therefore some kind of a balance of soul, which says that in that one universe, you really have the equilibrium of the universe. Nothing is up and down. Nothing is pro and con. Nothing enters and leaves. All this changing that would usually go on in the universe is not possible in the balance of soul. Gives you a terrific sense that the whole universe somehow is balanced, and therefore there is no friction, no strife, no struggle therein, but that everything is in the right place. That's the second category. And then we come to the third category. It's always more tangible to consciousness because we are used to think much more in the relation of God to man. That comes from the religious sense. We are brought up religiously, all of us, no matter if we have ever been in Sunday school or in church, still the whole atmosphere of our culture is very much molded by the religious thought, and that religious thought is always a question, God and man. The relationship of God to man and the relationship of man to God. So that's why we are used so much more to think in that third category than in the category 1 and 2. That's new. 1 and 2 is new. See, that's what Mrs. Eddy brought as something very new. The oneness of being is no subject in theology, because there you must have a God somewhere and a man somewhere, and the God that is good somewhere and the man that is a sinner somewhere, and then the relationship is established, what God does to that sinner. So the oneness of God is something that is foreign to the Christian thinker. It's much more natural to the mystics and to the Eastern philosophy, but not so much to the Western man. So the moment we come to category 3, things always seem to be more tangible for us to understand. So here we have that relationship. What is the relationship from soul to its creation? And there we find those very clear-cut ideas which we like in soul, namely that soul translates principle to the point of idea, because it's the nature of soul that it translates. Can you see? Translates means to bring from the point of principle to the point of idea. That's translation, the first translation. So soul translates. Actually, you see, principle to its idea is indented, because it just wants to bring out that translation means only the first translation, not the second translation, not the translation of matter back into mind. That comes later on. So one has to be a bit specific. Perhaps it's a help for you if you put principle to its idea in brackets, so that you just know as an indication what is really meant, that soul translates, but it's only the first translation of God to man. In translating God to man, soul does what? Soul always reproduces itself. It says, I'm soul, I translate myself to the point of infinite ideas, and what I do there, I reproduce myself there, so that I appear again in its likeness as the same nature, in the self-sameness. Yes. Actually, a very good expression I always found for category 1, sorry that I have to go back, but it just came into my mind, instead of saying identity, you could also say self-sameness. Because very often identity doesn't mean so much to some students, but if you say what identity means is self-sameness, that the self remains the self. That something is always remaining what it is. The self-sameness you could put there. So in the column 3, actually, soul does that. It translates itself, but by translating itself, it does not lose anything of its identity. Therefore, it translates itself by reproducing the quality of soul in the ideas. In this way we also have the relationship of principle to idea as soul identifying everything by defining everything, by making definite and giving to everything a divine identification. So can you see, here you get in much more the verb, whereas in the first column you get the noun, that soul is identity, and therefore in its action to idea, it identifies everything right. It identifies me right, it identifies a situation right, it identifies everything right. So that we see here that soul is never without its representative. Can you see this is different than in category 2? There I had said that soul is never without its representation. Through representation, you get the whole realm sense. It's everywhere represented. Whereas in Absolute Christian Science, you can see that soul is represented at every point, and so brings about, through its identification and reproduction, it brings about the representative of soul. Which, in the symbolism really of the third day of creation, which is the day of soul, it is the seed within itself. So the infinite withinness of soul in category 1 actually translates itself to the point of idea without losing anything of its identity, so that every seed has a seed within itself. That every idea has within itself the power of reproduction. So the earth brought forth herb and so on, which had the seed within itself. There you see that activity. In the third day, it is not shown that God has everything within itself, but that the idea, the dry land that is brought forth, has all the seed within itself. So, at that point we have established the divine and absolute facts about soul, and now we would like to see how does that affect the human plane of existence. So, category 4 says now, how does it come to the human? Again, it comes to the human, that identity of being as spiritual understanding. It comes to us that we actually spiritually understand that what is, the identities, the unchangeable identities. So again, that spiritual understanding is a quality which we have in the third degree, because we have said that column 4 very much symbolizes the third degree, namely how the translation touches the human. Therefore it comes to us as spiritual sense. Soul itself doesn't have to have spiritual sense. Soul is soul, the soul sense. But it comes to us as spiritual sense. It awakens up within us a spiritual sense, and therefore begins to testify spiritually. Soul testifies, doesn't testify according to the 5 physical senses, begins to testify spiritually. It gives us a spiritual testimony and talks to us and says to us something and talks to us in a spiritual way. It is that which gives us our destiny, our mission, defines our life mission. Not we define our life mission, not we can choose our life mission. We really have to accept what soul has in store for us, and because soul is definite and names everything divinely, we feel that soul now gives us our divine mission. It makes everything within us definite and we feel this really then that definiteness names us spiritually. See, at that point we are named spiritually, like Abram was suddenly called Abraham, like Jacob was called Israel, like Sarai was called Sarah, and so on. It was constantly given a new name when they saw something new. The moment they saw something spiritually, they got a new name. It comes to us, therefore, as the true self-sameness of God, as our true selfhood. It defines and identifies us, what we divinely are. We have soul that gives freedom, comes to us as freedom. Because why? Because we have seen soul is unlimited. And so we are not limited in any way, gives us true freedom. So what we have in category 2, as soul being unlimited, shows itself forth within us as the freedom of soul. Well, the identity and untouchability of soul, the inviolability of soul, you know, translates itself and comes to us and says, I feel safe, because I feel that I cannot be touched, I cannot be attacked, nothing can violate me. So it gives me a sense of safety, security, stability, certainty, surety. Actually, we should have here security. Perhaps my handwriting was not good enough for the typist. Perhaps I wanted to say that security, but surety is also right. You get really the unmovable state of consciousness. Comes to us as joy, a joy of soul, happiness, satisfaction. Can you see that we could never put really joy, happiness into the column 1. Could never say, well, soul is happy. Soul is joyous. Because joy and happiness are really human connotations. So only when soul translates itself to us, we experience it as the joy of soul, as the happiness, as the satisfaction of soul, but we experience it as such. Not soul itself experiences itself as joy or a happiness. That is absolutely foreign. These are human connotation, human attitudes, human motions, whatever we can call it. And as sinlessness, now again you have soul is sinless, but it comes to us in as sinlessness. Yes.
After you've gone through this column, would that explain why you never use the phrase divine soul?
Uh-huh.
Because, right?
Yeah.
You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
It took me years to get this one.
Yes? How come?
Because you said soul has no spiritual sense.
Yeah.
But up on top in column 4, you said spiritual sense comes to us.
I experience soul as spiritual sense.
That the fact that soul itself has no spiritual sense, that's why you never use the term divine soul.
Oh, good.
Right?
Well, there is something in that, perhaps, huh?
If that's not the answer, what is the answer?
You really are a straight shooter, huh? I wanted to back out.
It's not an attention. I asked you this 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah. And I didn't answer it.
No, shoot me away.
Yeah. Shall I answer you now?
I'm listening.
Good. She never said divine soul. Huh?
Right.
She said divine mind.
Right.
Perhaps divine spirit, divine principle, divine life, divine truth, divine love.
Right.
Could she say divine soul? Could she?
She have said it?
No, she never said it in the textbook. That
right.
We can check. Huh?
Right, I know.
But could she use the term divine soul?
Well, I would say if she could, she would, but
no.
She didn't.
Well, that's the point. You see, that's what I want to drive at. You said if one could say it, she would have used it. No? She can't say everything in the textbook. The textbook is only 600 pages, and she can only bring in so much. Huh? She cannot bring in what the Bible says, that if we would tell everything what Jesus said, then it would be all the books would fill the whole world. Huh? And we could say the same thing if Mrs. Eddy would have said all that she could have said, it would fill so many books that all the books together would fill the world. Meaning that if Mrs. Eddy hasn't said something, that does not mean that she could have said it, because she can only say so much and not more. The answer must be in categorical thinking. The answer you have very easily is, what is divine? Divine is the category of Christ. Huh? God is incorporeal, divine. Therefore, divine is a category. And we have seen, because being is one, every category blends with every other category. Therefore, the seven synonymous terms blend with all the categories. Therefore, you can easily say divine soul. Easily. But when would you say divine soul? You would say divine soul when there is a question about the human soul. And therefore, if her subject somewhere would have been that we believe in a human soul, which she doesn't, she only talks about soul with a small s, she would have corrected that by saying divine soul. Because the system, the science, allows that rendering.